Good afternoon, everybody. My name's Zeke. I'm here with Bettina, and this is Movement Museum, where we talk about dance on the radio, on your computer, on your mobile device, in your ears. And as usual, we start with a poem. This is by Richard Le Gallien, or Richard the Galleon. It's called The Lonely Dancer. I had no heart to join the dance. I danced it all so long ago. Ah, light-winged music out of France, let other feet glide to and fro, weaving new patterns or romance for bosoms of new-fallen snow. But leave me thus where I may hear the leafy rustle of the waltz, the shell-like murmur in my ear, the silken whisper fairy false of unseen rainbows circling near, and the glad shuddering of the walls. Another dance the dancers spin, a shadowed dance of mystic pain, and other partners enter in and dance within my lonely brain. The swaying woodlands shod in green, the ghostly dancers of the rain. The lonely dancers of the sea foam-footed on the sandy bar, the wizard dance of wind and tree, the eddying dance of stream and star. Yea, all these dancers tread for me a measure mournful and bizarre. An echo dance where ear is eye, and sound evokes the shapes of things, and when out of silence and a sigh, the sad world like a picture springs. As when some secret bird sweeps by, we see it in the sound of wings. Those human feet upon the floor, that eager pulse of rhythmic breath, how sadly to an unknown shore each silver footfall hurrieth, a dance of autumn leaves no more on the fantastic wind of death. Fire clasped to elemental fire, 'tis thus the solar atoms whirl, the butterfly and airy gyre on autumn morning swarms and swirls in dance of delicate desire, no other than these boys and girls. The same strange music everywhere, the woven paces just the same, dancing from out the viewless air into the void from whence they came. Ah, but they make a gallant flare against the dark each little flame. And what if all the meaning lies just in the music, not in those who dance thus with transfigured eyes, holding in vain each other close? Only the music never dies, the dance goes on, the dancer goes. A woman dancing o'er a world, poised on one crystal foot afar, in shining gulfs of silence whirled, like notes of the strange music are. Small shape against another curled, or dancing dust that makes a star, to him who plays the violin, all one it is who joins the reel, drops from the dance or enters in, so that the never-ending wheel cease not its mystic course to spin, for weal or woe, for woe or weal.
Wow. Yeah. Am I on?
Yes, you are. Yeah, okay. Yes, you're there. I looked at it and said, wah.
Interesting. I like the line where it said, the dancers perish, but the music stays.
Yeah, no, there it's what I was getting struck with. Was because it's which one? Six rhyming couplets. Mm-hmm. That struck me as a waltz because the first two would go bum 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 bum, and then sort of like the third one would just sort of hang out there. So it's 1 2 3 one two.
That's
three,
right.
1 2 3.
It's a waltz.
Yes, but yeah, we have a yeah. How are you doing, by the way?
All right.
That's good.
Getting ready for Nuit Blanche, like everybody else, I hope.
Yes, and I have the schedule there. Yeah, we got lots of dance stuff to talk about when we get to the calendar time.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we have an interview with Deborah Dunn.
Cool.
I had recorded this, I think, about 2 weeks ago or so. It's the sort of thing where, just before she was doing her, four quartets, the T.S. Eliot poems, where she dances to them. And as she will explain, she's got an Alex, she was just basically riveted by this Alex Guinness reading of the four quartets. And so let me play you something here.
At the still point of the turning world, neither flesh nor fleshless, neither from nor towards, at the still point there the dance is, but neither arrest nor movement, and do not call it fixity where past and future are gathered, neither movement from nor towards, neither ascent nor decline, except for the point, the still point, there would be no dance, and there is only the dance. I can only say there we have been, but I cannot say where. And I cannot say how long, for that is to place it in time. the inner freedom from the practical desire, the release from action and suffering, release from the inner and the outer compulsion, yet surrounded by a grace of sense, a white light still and moving, Erhebung without motion, concentration without elimination, both a new world and the old made explicit, understood in the completion of its partial ecstasy, the resolution of its partial horror.
Well, Four Quartets started because I discovered these recordings of Sir Alec Guinness reading T.S. Eliot's poetry. And I'd already sort of fallen for Eliot. I'd made a peace with my sister, based, you know, using Sir Alfred, the love song of Sir Alfred, J. Alfred Prufrock. So I found these recordings and I was just, you know, doing the dishes with, I was just putting them on and I found them really beautiful. And then I realized, oh no, I want to dance to this. It's... And then I made Burt Norton like 7 years ago and then decided to choreograph the three other quartets and make a whole evening out of it. So content, what drew me to, yes, content. I mean, Burt Norton initially, mainly because of the dance imagery in the poem. Like when I thought, I want to dance to this. Like I'd put on the poems and just let them roll. Guinness recorded, I think, almost everything Eliot wrote.
Quite possibly back in those days they did things like that.
Yeah. Actually, the BBC just did another special on Eliot just and focused on the four quartets, but it was Ralph Fiennes who read it. And it wasn't nearly as good. It was just... Anyway. I like the four quartets. I mean, certainly more than The Wasteland in terms of something that I could interpret. Okay. I mean, I guess some people might say it's the more accessible version. I also did Prufrock, which is very accessible for Eliot, but it's not Cats.
Okay.
Yeah.
Close.
Yeah.
And there, yeah, so this is with Malta, the first time, this is going to be the premiere for him, or am I completely off?
It's a premiere in Montreal.
Premiere, okay.
I did it last two summers ago in Newfoundland and Vancouver. Then I did this, so we had to cancel the Montreal show, I had the baby, and so now, and then I did it in Lennoxville about a week ago, and I'm doing it in French, in Saint-Thérèse, and then I'm taking it back to Vancouver.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, you said that about 4 years ago or so?
That I did Burt Norton?
No, that you had started the whole process.
Five or 6 years ago, I think, I did Burt Norton. I started maybe longer. I found the recordings more like 10 years ago.
Okay, and then it's really just, I'm just now looking for like the process to get it up onto stage and sort of,
I made the first solo, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, I think. And then I decided 3 years ago to, it took about, when I decided to do a whole evening and use all four quartets, I'd say it took like a year and a half. And I took a year and I really focused all my reading on the quartets themselves and Eliot's life. Because that's sort of interesting to me too. I've done this before and I'm interested in the artist's biography and then having that inform, you know, how that works with the art that artist made. And since I'm on stage, you know, I'm working with characters, so learning about Eliot really helped in terms of the interpretation.
Okay.
And so like a year and a half, and then I read and researched for like a year, and then, you know, made each one, took like a month or 2 months max to make each one.
What was the process in making them?
Basically going into the studio, leaving the text behind, and going into the, but having it, you know, having done all that research, of course, knowing a basic idea of how I wanted each piece to be, you know, in terms of the quality of the movement, and the, you know, I had the content of the poem in my body, but I would just generate movement. Then I would bring in the recordings of the text. Like once I have some phrases, once I have some movement ideas, that are sort of solid in my own body. I bring in the text and I just dance and see how things line up and start weaving the text and the dance together. And I speak as well, so then there was working the monologue. There's times where I just stand and do a monologue, and other times when I'm dancing and talking at the same time.
Okay. Was you in the mirror listening to yourself? Was
no, I don't. I don't work with a mirror.
Okay.
I work with rehearsal directors.
Okay.
Yeah. And not until it's quite finished do I even look at myself on video.
Okay. I was thinking in terms of trying to figure out in terms of they just be, again back to the process of okay, so you have the ideas, you have the phrases, you're working it out. Is somebody watching you while
you're
doing it?
Yeah, I had two rehearsal directors, Sarah Henley and Dean Makarenko, who's actually Dean is. We call him dramaturge now, because he had a lot to do.
Yes.
Yeah, you can, yeah. What do you think about that, Kate? Yeah, so yeah, they're my mirrors. My rehearsal directors are my mirrors, yeah.
Okay. And, yeah, so then, so, sorry, I just got confused.
That's okay.
That's okay. And so yeah, then it's so then you're going back to Vancouver with us and do you, with your pieces and stuff like because I saw Nocturnes at the beginning of the month.
Yes.
Or at the end of last month. I sort of think do you have a sort of time frame for them?
How long do they last?
Yeah.
Well, you know, ideally they go up and then they like Elegant Heathens, my group piece before Nocturnes toured for 5 years. We're doing it again this year.
Very cool.
Yeah. I have a huge run of shows, but the shows sort of stay alive. I'm kind of touring in Canada.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Nocturnes, we did it. It didn't go as well when we opened it, so it didn't, it got, we took it to Guelph, and then it sort of died, and I thought it was dead, and I applied to Camontournée, and they took it, so it came back to
okay.
Or sometimes a piece will just, Lulu, or sometimes a piece will just, we get performed once and then never get performed. But that doesn't happen too often these days.
Those are special performances.
Yes. Yeah.
So this one you have no sort of idea in your head this is going to last 2 years, this is going to last 5 years, it's more...
No, I think this one's going to last like 10 until I can't dance it anymore. Mm-hmm. And then I'm considering whether I want to teach it to a dancer in the States. No, I think this one will last because I don't think I'll make something else for myself, so I think this will be the thing that I dance as I physically deteriorate.
Okay, although there it's been talking to a lot of older dancers, and you'd be surprised at what your body can do.
Well, I dance. I mean, I love dancing right now. Like, it becomes more interesting to me. So no, I don't feel like stopping, and that's why I really am glad I have this solo.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah.
One thing, but anyhow, we'll get on. In terms of then more back into just your career, stuff like that. How did you, when did you start? How did you get into dance? And just did it
I'm from Vancouver and I did a degree in visual art at Simon Fraser. I came out here a bit too. I got introduced to dance at university. And when I got out, I was, you know, thinking I was going to be a visual artist and working for an architect and working as a photographer and designer and stuff. And I started going to dance class. And then I got just slowly pulled into dance. It wasn't, I just ended up in dance. Started making dances.
Was there any one specific dance, one sort of moment, a eureka moment or just...
A little bit. Babe. I'm going to talk about my eureka moment here. Yeah, I would say I sort of came to dance as an audience member. Watching Jennifer Maskell's Cathedral, which is a dance a Vancouver choreographer, dancer made, I kind of was watching that piece and going, this is what I want to do. And she was actually dancing and talking at the same time and comparing the body to a cathedral. It's a really smart and beautiful piece. And I was pretty much in the visual arts at that time, going to see a lot of dance. And I was just, I liked the sort of blackout, and I liked the black room more than the bright white gallery in terms of an experience for taking in art. And was attracted to the sort of more matriarchal aspect of dance compared to the visual arts.
Okay.
And there's a lot of women who I thought, you know, could mentor me or something. I felt, I just thought that dance, and then after that I started going, I think this is what I should be doing. Yeah.
And so then how did you proceed?
I just kept dancing and making dances.
Well, when you say just kept dancing, it's something that's completely funny. You just sort of like, how do you do that? Yeah, in terms of if I decided I wanted to be a dancer, I would.
You think you'd have to go to a major training program and start when you're 5 and all that?
Not necessarily 5, but it's right now I figure, yes, my father definitely gave me the wrong advice because I was fascinated with dance. I probably got introduced to it about 16 or 17, and then he told me, no, you're too old. At which point I realized
that's so sad. Yeah,
shit happens.
Men especially can get away with starting later more than women.
But then it's the sort of thing like now, realizing talking to people who are dancing and they're like 60, 65 and stuff like that. And I was, I could probably, if I wanted to, put my head to it. But I'd still be thinking of, still taking a course. How do you, get involved into that scene so that you just make dances and then...
Well, Simon Fraser really helped. It was very interdisciplinary, so even though I was doing visual arts, I could take dance class. So my first dance classes were at SFU. My sister was a choreographer and dancer and theater director. She's ended up doing theater rather than dance. So there was that. There was my sister. There was Simon Fraser. So when I got out of university, I was like, I was getting up and going to dance class to keep myself in shape and to get myself out of bed and... because I loved it. And I would just go to professional dance class. I was terrible. People said I was dangerous, but I just went, and they didn't tell me to go away. I mean, after my degree, I went to Europe and did a, tour on what money I had, and I would just go to, like, professional dance class in these cities I was in. It was awesome, a way to get away from being a tourist, because you don't need language and... So I think I was just sort of cavalier. I just wasn't going to do this. But I was an athlete when I was a teenager. It wasn't as, I was pretty athletic. It wasn't as if I was going, there's not this already sort of in me. Mm-hmm. And like I said, my sister was a dancer. Okay. Though as a teenager, I totally rejected it. I went to one ballet class and thought it was just horrific, kind of.
Yeah, there was also a big difference between ballet classes and dance classes and where things are going now.
Exactly, yeah. And I was more athletic and... not a bit more of a tomboy that way. I couldn't deal with the dance the way it was presented to me at that point anyway.
And so then after school, how did you, what were the dances and how did you end up here in Montreal?
Then I started making, like, my first solo that I made, went to the Canada Dance Festival. I had to perform it after Jose Navas. It was just like... So I got some really, I think this also happened because I got some pretty positive feedback right at the beginning. Then I just, like, how do you do it? You just do it. You just ask people to dance for you. You just go to dance class. You take workshops. Go to shows. You know, you just immerse yourself in the scene. And apply for grants, you know. And then you get one, and then you get all like, oh, I should do this. They gave me money. And then you 20 years later, you're like, oh my God.
Exactly.
This is all I do.
And so, you're talking about in terms of, with this one being the last one that you're likely to be dancing yourself, how and why have you come to that conclusion?
Well, that's not a sure thing, but I sort of, you never know. You know what I mean? In the near future, I won't be making myself another solo. Mm-hmm. I'm more interested in making another group piece.
Okay. Oh, so okay. And then I'm confused. When I heard there was the last one, I was assuming you were going to be taking yourself off the stage. Did you still be making dances for groups and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Do you have anything in mind?
Yeah, I'm working on a piece based on Virginia Woolf's Orlando.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and how did that come about?
Oh, I just really liked the book and had been thinking about how fun it would be to stage it for years. So then I just went, okay, now's the time.
Okay, and is it the same sort of process with a group as to a solo, or...?
Well, my process with a group is, obviously different, but I do spend some time alone. I do start the process with some movement that I've generated by myself. And then get them, you know, get them generally knowing where I'm coming from. But then there's more sort of improv and collaboration with them. Once they sort of know what's going on, we open it up and improvise. But the same, I try to get something pretty solid before the music comes in, or the text, or whatever we're working with. Yeah.
Okay. And so this is, where are you in the process now?
I've had one creative process for Orlando.
Okay. And how many more do you think it's going to take?
Two minimum. So another one spring or summer, and then the show is going to go up apparently in February or winter 2012 at Agora upstairs. So we'll have another one before then.
Yes.
What?
Oh yeah, realizing there's nothing like a deadline to make something come.
Oh yeah.
Fixed.
You need your deadline.
And,
yeah.
And then if it's winter 2012, which is a full year away, obviously there's gonna be some time to do it.
Yeah. But it takes that. Like, it's a lot of organization. Yeah. Once you get in the studio, it can happen fairly fast or not. But getting, you know, hiring everybody and scheduling and getting the money and all the collaborators, you know, because I'm working with a composer and the costumes, it takes a while, because we start from scratch, you know. It's not like, and then the thing needs time too, often.
Yes, no, most creation, you know, it's one thing that everything that everybody needs to create is time.
Yeah, yeah. So.
And then the other question I have, as far as your piece, because the only one that I've seen is Nocturnes.
Yes.
Can you tell me what that, because I just saw it, and it's the sort of thing where I was, yeah, I'd like to know more about it.
Well, Nocturnes also started with a literary inspiration. I was wanting to stage Wuthering Heights. And also wanting to work with Chopin's Nocturnes, and I hired a composer to, you know, interpret and deconstruct them and make his own music. And then the basic thrust of it was that I wanted to do sort of a surreal, I was sort of thinking, you know, Magritte meets Emily Bronte kind of thing.
Okay.
And off I went. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For all the performances, the play, is it the same group of dancers?
Only one was replaced. It was the same group the last time we did it, except for Alexandre Berenteau replaced Daniel Villeneuve.
Okay.
He was the guy in the blue.
And yeah, that was part one of our interview with Deborah Dunn and Lou James Prue Dunn, who is there in the background. It was, we're getting a snowstorm tomorrow. That was the lad Dunn at the last snowstorm that we got.
All right. So, that's a good reference point. It's very Canadian reference points.
Although I can't for the life of me remember when it was. I just know tromping through the snow so as to get there. It's about 2:28. My name is Zeke. I'm here with Bettina, and we're talking about dance on your radio computer, mobile device. It's, I forgot at the top of the hour, but CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on your cable dial, and movementmuseum.com on your computer and on your cable dial. We will be back. We have a couple of messages that need to be played, and we will be back on the other side of them.
Movement Museum, opinions and primary voices. In a world increasingly reduced to a who markets louder philosophy that is, by definition, going to steamroll contemporary dance right out of existence, Movement Museum is an hour-long talk show where all you will hear is honest and compelling opinions. Opinions on why dance matters. Opinions on why dance. Opinions on what dance matters. Opinions on what dance. We talk to dancers, choreographers, teachers, composers, academics, audience members, producers, presenters, and anyone else with an opinion on dance. What moves them? What do they like? And most importantly, why? Live Thursdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, and archive for all of eternity Friday mornings at movement-museum.blogspot.com.
we have returned. And I promise you, Bettina, I will get the theme music for this week in dance history up soon.
Yeah, promises, promises.
At least I'm not giving you arpege.
Arpege?
Yeah, there. It's when I was 7, probably 8, before we moved here. And yeah, obviously, since you didn't grow up here, you didn't get that commercial either. But there was this wonderful commercial that I still remember to this day about the guy who wanted to get the girl. And so this very deep-voiced guy, sort of Barry White before Barry White actually started singing. Mm-hmm. There was this roses and champagne and wine. It was basically promise her anything, give her arpège. And apparently arpège is a perfume.
All right.
And I've never bought perfume for anybody.
Well, maybe everybody already smells good.
Quite possibly there, because I'm realizing, yes, I do regularly buy flowers, and flowers, yeah.
It's a lot nicer. Also, they smell, so it's a 2-in-1.
Mm-hmm. And I just don't understand the whole sort of concept. It's being, what is it, the Y chromosome challenge people, their reaction to flowers is just beyond me. I just recognize it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
But yeah, we're foaming about stuff that is not dance related. We have dance related stuff, don't we?
Yes, we do. We do. We do have This Week in Dance History. And I discovered Eleanor King. Have you heard of her before?
No.
No, same here.
No, I thought you were going to get Dame Margot Fonteyn.
No, she didn't come up in my search.
Oh.
Are you serious?
Yes, She died on the 21st, or the 21st of February, I think probably about 10 or 15 years ago.
Darn it.
That's okay.
Okay. Well, maybe we catch her again on her birthday.
Quite possibly.
We'll do that. So in the meantime, we'll learn all about Eleanor King. She was born on February 8th, 1906, and passed away on February 27th, 1991. She was an American modern dancer, choreographer, and educator. King was a member of the original Humphrey Whiteman Company, where she was a principal dancer in the pioneering modern dance movement in New York. She then moved on to choreography and founded her own dance company in Seattle, the Eleanor King Dance Repertory Company. King studied mime with Etienne de Crou, and in the late 1950s, she began studying Japanese no dances. Her first performance of these was in Tokyo, 1958. She created the Theater of the Imagination program at the University of Arkansas, where she taught for much of her career. In 1971, King retired to Santa Fe, New Mexico, to start a new course of study into classical Japanese and Korean dance. She choreographed over 120 dance works and wrote extensively for a variety of dance publications. In 2000, her archive was recognized by the White House Millennium Council's Save America's Treasure Program. King was a member of the Congress on Research and Dance and director of Mino Nicolas American Dance Repertory Theater, a position she held until her death on February 27, 1991, aged 85.
Okay. She sounds like somebody I should have heard of.
I agree. So sometimes it's also nice to, shine a light on those we should know but don't.
That's the whole purpose behind it. Yeah, just it's there. Margot Fonteyn died on the 21st of February. She was an English ballerina from the 20th century. She is widely regarded, as, according to Wikipedia, as one of the greatest classical ballet dancers of all time. She spent her entire career as a dancer with the Royal Ballet, eventually being appointed Prima Ballerina Assoluta of the company by Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II.
Nice. I saw a documentary about her, and there was one performance of her. I think she was doing Cinderella, and it involved her doing a pirouette on point, but a series of pirouettes. And each time, like, one young man was sort of strutting past her, holding her for a second so she could stay up. And she barely even needed this. She was just doing pirouette after pirouette, and she was in such perfect balance. Even for somebody who has no clue about ballet, it was so obviously a flawless performance.
Mm-hmm. Now, there it's one of the things that I sort of look at, this website called The Ballet Bag.
Oh.
And they very frequently, like for Giselle, which mm-hmm. I know you're not going to like stuff like that. We already discussed this, but they not only give you the synopsis, they then go through and do research onto YouTube to find you, okay, these are the ones that you must see. These are the spectacular dancers. Mm. Then they have another set of, these are the clips from that ballet about these are the contemporary dancers who are doing it. And then they have, these are the ones, and they're just absolutely phenomenal. And yes, I'm certain on YouTube, there's tons of stuff about Dame Margot Fonteyn.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. She's a real icon.
Yes. She died on 21st of February, 1991. When did Eleanor King die?
The 27th. So
a week apart.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And yeah, Jen is in here. So we have to make up this on the website ourselves. Yeah, by the way, the website, if anybody is interested, is movementmuseum.com. And for the most part, I try and get, I don't know, two posts a day up there before 9 o'clock, so that when...
It's a busy site and definitely worth visiting.
And yeah, it's the sort of thing where Manon only got up her video of Icon à Ventre, which was one of my favorite dances of all this year so far. I'm being extremely sarcastic about it, but nonetheless, if you want to see what it was like, you can definitely check out 5 minutes and 28 seconds of it on our blog or on Vimeo, all over the place. And then the one that I particularly got a kick out of was this thing called Continuous, mm-hmm. where it was this dancing to math.
That is very cool. Mm-hmm. What? Explain dancing to math? Robots?
No, it's the sort of thing where basically... Hold on a second. Let's open the link in the new tab. And what's the description say? And here it is. Continuous, a collaboration between mathematician, choreographer Summer Jones and filmmaker Adrian Hughes. Continuous is a study of a mathematical proof describing the dancing body accelerating through space and time, coupled with the movement, the voiceover is the spoken proof, which creates a duality between the musicality and its physical existence in the performative arena. To cut through that academic gobbledygook, mm-hmm. is basically you got this woman who I assume is Summer Jones, who's doing some very nice contemporary dancing stuff, not ballet or anything like that, but just sort of your standard issue stuff you'd see at Agora or you'd see at Tangente. And then they put this mathematical proof that I don't remember what it is, and I don't know what it proves exactly, but they sort of superimpose it on the screen, and it moves around a little bit and so on, but not sort of like those Ford F-150 commercials, but just moves around in a graceful way. Mm. And the movements obviously are corresponding. I don't know myself exactly why, if X equals V, how that movement translates into something that Summer Jones does, but there is definitely a connection between them.
I can actually totally see that work, because a lot of dance, we've had artists here and choreographers here who talked about gravity and how they try to defy gravity and how they try to work with verticals and with angles and live in that moment, and X and Y are also, you know, it's all about your position and your relative position to something else. So actually, I can totally see that work.
Mm-hmm. 2 minutes and 43 seconds. It's very, very nicely done.
And so this is up on our blogs. Yes. Remind me which day. How far do I need to scroll down?
Tuesday, I think, is when I put it up.
Okay.
So it's about just a little bit around the list of all the incomplete list of all the dance companies in Quebec.
Right. Definitely going to check that out.
And while you're checking that out, how about I play the second part of the Deborah Dunn interview?
Yeah, that was the question that I forgot earlier. Was I'm jumping all over the place, but yeah, no, that which one? Which one? The four quartets. Is you doing French?
I know. In a month. In Saint-Thérèse.
Okay, are you working off of somebody else's translation? Did you translate?
Oh my God, no. There's one translation that exists of four quartets, mm-hmm. that is apparently very, very good. And I, even my level of French, I think it sounds pretty beautiful. Okay. And I got Jean Malle, a very good actor singer with a beautiful voice to interpret it, and it's gorgeous. So he's replacing Guinness. And Diane Labras, I have some. Stacey Christodoulou reads some of the poem on voiceover. Diane Labrosse replaced her voice. So in terms of that, it's been really easy because the composers have just had to replace the English with the French in terms of their compositions. And the translation isn't that much different in terms of length. It's obviously longer, but not hugely. No, the problem's going to be more my monologues, my text, mm-hmm. but we're going to go for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it, in your mind, is it a variation on what you're doing, or is it a completely separate piece?
I have no idea.
Okay.
Because it's not up yet.
Okay.
I don't know what it's going to feel like, but it's going to be really interesting, I think, yeah.
Because now I'd be thinking in terms of just having a different language where it would be almost like a completely new piece.
I have a feeling it will feel aesthetically very different, but the content is, you know, we'll see. The content is still going to be the content. It's, a, you know.
Mm-hmm. The movement's going to be, you're just trying to work them in or work around them? Or
the movements will be exactly the same. I'll just have to change them rhythmically a bit to fit the French. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Some slight things might change because, you know, I think what's interesting about the piece is that I've got this dancing that I'm doing, and then we've got Elliot and Guinness, which is, you know, not a bad thing. And then I've got to keep some integrity, you know, like I've got to keep my own thing going on in terms of the dancing and the performing, so I'm not completely, you know, swallowed by these guys. But then, so I'm going and I'm listening and then, you know, sometimes it just lines up perfectly. And other times it doesn't. I'm more conversing with them than just listening and letting it pass through me, or, you know, doing exactly what the text says or whatever. So that might shift a bit in French. Different things might trigger me in French than in English.
Okay.
Yeah, and maybe even content-wise, some things might seem different. I don't know. I've got a month, so, and I'm performing it in English right now, so as soon as that's done, I will become French.
I'm always endlessly fascinated with just this sort of little differences between English and French that are like night and day to me, where it's like with the books. In English, you turn your head to the right. In French, you turn your head to the left.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Huh. Yeah, I think it'll be a little bit like that, just a big, huge shift. Mm-hmm. But then, hopefully, a francophone will have a, you know, it'll be the same piece in a way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it'd be interesting also to take it someplace like the National Arts Center and do the French version, the English version, bilingual.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'm very excited about it. I mean, and I think if it's functions, it'll go. It'll definitely get performed in Quebec and maybe even France, so yeah. Yeah.
That'd be very cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I think the poem translates well. And the most important thing is Jean did a beautiful, you know, I have a really nice interpretation to dance to, so, yeah.
Okay.
And he really loved the text. We had a really great conversation about Quebec's relationship to France and our relationship to England and blah, 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 and, you know, there was really something there for him as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say it's just a matter of the sort of overall financial problems in the past 5 years or something, and that, yeah. But Quebec, a lot of Quebec companies do a lot of touring in Europe, but it's been toned down for sure. It's not happening nearly as much. And I think it's just the economy, actually, yeah. But, you know, it's still going on.
Okay.
I don't know if I answered your question.
I'm not certain I phrased the question properly. I'm sort of questioning myself as to what was the whole idea. But
I mean, there is something kind of cosmopolitan happening in Montreal, if that's like in terms of contemporary dance. It's like, I don't think as strong as it was 5 years ago, because the festivals are not as, you know, we used to have Festival International de Nouvelle Danse, which was incredible, lots of work coming through. But yeah, I'm not sure if we're on the same train with that.
Yes, no, there it's, yeah, at some point I want to get Marie-Hélène Falcon to interview her.
Yes.
And see, you know, where her head's coming from, because that sort of marriage that they made and sort of how they pushed out that Chantal Pompion, you could probably write a couple of books about that.
Yes. Yeah, and it's whatever you have to say about that festival was incredible. You know, that was a lot of dance, and mm-hmm. it was.
Yes. And
yeah.
Seems like he's getting a little bit antsy.
I know. Though. It's too bad.
That's okay. My last question will be: is there anything else that we should talk about?
Oh, look,
briefly.
Just a second, okay.
Okay. Yes.
What, should we talk a little? Will you be quiet so that we can talk? Well, I don't know if it would be nice for your program to have a bit of the soundtrack of Guinness reading. Did you get something from the publicist?
No, Nicola, he was like the dog with a bone. I gotta get you guys together.
Okay. Well, but he's also got little MP3s of the sound of Guinness. I don't know. We talked a lot about the dance and words.
You think Lou's gonna become a dancer? Don't you want him to become a dancer?
I want him to do whatever he wants to do. I don't know if he's gonna become a dancer. Maybe. I mean, I think I'll definitely make it an option. I think it's a real problem that little boys don't dance. Actually. It would save a few lives, I think. If a few of them found dance. Rather than becoming psycho killers. Yeah. No, I think dance is a great thing for anybody to do. So, yeah, if Lou wants to do it, sure.
One thing that strikes me is that how back when I was a child, they're very... large distinctions between types of dances, modern dance, jazz dancing, classical ballet, and so on, and they all seem to be morphing together.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see where it's going to end up in 20 years.
Yeah. I mean, a friend of mine is teaching a class to adults who want to learn how to dance in contact without steps. You know, they want to go out at night and be able to, even if it's a tango playing, like, you know, dance with touch, but not have to study tango for 10 years. So that's, I thought, really like, yeah, contemporary dance is starting to seep in, where people are going, oh, I want to dance, and there is, you know, people are starting to have an awareness of what contemporary dance is. And I was part of this think tank last year, and we were like, should we change the name? Is contemporary dance a very good name? But in a way, it's kind of good because it holds everything. Mm-hmm. It is sort of without a dominant aesthetic. There are different things. And, you know, ballet is still ballet, even though it's absorbing contemporary dance, too.
Although that's where I get very annoyed, because it's like, how about I can't dance? To me, they should be doing only ballet. They should be doing classical ballet. They should be the ones.
Why?
Because if they don't do it, nobody's going to do it.
The National Ballet does it, and the Royal Winnipeg does it. It's exactly. Two companies.
And we have many dance companies in Montreal, and nobody in Montreal is going to be able to see classical ballet.
Right.
And yes, the National Ballet, there's whatchamacallit, all sorts of ballets all over the world who are doing classical ballet.
Yeah, but why not in Montreal?
Exactly.
But that sort of reflects Montreal. You know, what happened here in dance and why I think it was so special is that they didn't have, you know, a big ballet company or a big modernist company. You know, when Quebecers started making dance, it was really original and theatrical and athletic, and it was a cultural expression rather than, you know, it wasn't mirroring New York or dealing with the classical repertoire or blah, 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 blah. So I think it's given Montreal a more, you know, a less historically weighted kind of approach to dance.
Although I still think, especially given my knowledge of visual arts, I have that historical knowledge because I don't have it, I assume makes it a lot easier to then react as opposed to sort of running into something that everybody else in that milieu knows and sort of, I'm saying, oh my god.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I mean, I think that is kind of a strange thing that's happening in Quebec culture is that because it's, you know, this notion of history is kind of short. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cool, then which one? I think that's about it. I have other things we can talk about till the cows come home, but I think we would probably get into that.
I'm sorry about this. You know, our last interview that was scheduled, I got a babysitter.
Don't worry about it.
I was like, okay, I'll be able to go without Lou.
but I think it's just because he's not part of it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if you're quite ready to talk about T.S. Eliot. Maybe Heidegger. Have you got a word on Heidegger?
He is definitely going to be part of it.
Yeah, he's going to be part of it. Mm-hmm. That's, I know, Jennifer Mescal, who I had my, what did you call it? The moment of...
My
Eureka moment, watching her dance. She had three children, and she said her regret, you know, and they're all grown up now, is that she didn't integrate them more. You know, that she rather, she tried to keep her dance life and her family kind of separated.
And I spoke with Andrea Boardman once, and the thing that she was most proud of was being dancing as a grandmother.
Wow. Oh my God. Yeah, she's incredible.
Not certain if she's going to dance much more, but yes, right. At the time it was whatever it was that had locked in the last show. She was on that.
Amelia.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Or did she do the show after that?
No, it was Amelia was the last one that...
that she danced.
I think it was the last one I saw. So remember the pearl and the video and the throbbing?
No, Amelia was before that. It's the one that he made the film of.
Okay.
The pearls and everything.
Yes, yeah, whatever was led in him. No, there, you're right. It's Amelia's not his last one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. What was that called? Amjad or something?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. Now are you going to be quiet, Booth? Finished? Well, that was nice.
Yes.
Is that okay? You think
yes.
You got enough?
Uh-huh.
Yeah? Okay, good.
Well, I've got this, got the, probably 5 or 10 minutes before, and we'll probably edit it down to something about 20 or 25 minutes.
Oh my God, mm-hmm. Really?
Yes. No, it's one of the nice things about it, also sort of the whole idea of sort of doing it as
promo. Not doing that, like a 3 minute.
No, it's there realizing, yes, like everybody is this date, time, price. No, let's go find out about stuff. And we have a full hour to play with.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
At the point, let's take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank
great.
You very much.
Great.
I will email you when it is, when it is up.
Okay, good. Mm-hmm.
And I look forward to the show. I'm going to see it the 3rd. Today is the 2nd, so tomorrow. Yes.
Great. The opening. All right. Because mm-hmm. I'm like, I've been feeling fine about it. Then all of a sudden, is anybody going to come? It's a solo. It's like, because, you know, when you have a big cast, you always have a lot of...
We have returned. I'd like to thank Deborah Dunn and Lou James Prue Dunn for the interview.
Yeah, that was fun.
And yeah, now that we're talking, we can put the music in the background. And this is the Hilario Duran Trio from their CD Emotion, which just came out. And yeah, I don't know, actually in the fall. And yeah, I know which one, somebody involved with the record. And I was like Latin jazz. Anyhow, that's neither here nor there. Yeah, it's, what is it, 2:54? Holy smokes.
We've got to hustle.
Yeah, it's 2:54. My name is Zeke. I'm here with Bettina. This is Movement Museum, where we talk about dance in Montreal on your radio, on your computer, on your mobile device. MovementMuseum.com, CKUT 90.3 FM, or 91.7 on your cable dial. Yeah, do you have any plans for this week? Do we have a calendar section? I don't know how to come up with a theme for the calendar section.
Oh, so another theme for you to make. Well, Nuit Blanche is coming up. And since I'm going to be in the Belgo anyway, I thought I would suggest the pop happening at Studio 303. And it kind of sounds promising. Apparently, it's going to be a nocturnal immersive happening where 5 semi-interactive and fully mesmerizing capsules are looped all night long. Dance with live music and gorgeous light. So, and Frédéric Gravel, who we know.
Yes. He's all over the place.
He is,
I saw some press release where not only is he doing some sort of choreography for something, but he's actually doing the lighting for somebody else.
Yeah, he's very busy. Mm-hmm. So that thing at Studio 303, all night, 5 different looping mini performances.
Mm-hmm. Although I'm getting all excited about the rubber band dance performance that's happening at the Sankyam Sal. That's starting at 1 o'clock in the morning on the 27th of Nuit Blanche and going until 4 o'clock. 3 hours of dance. And it's in the blurb here that they explain, experience firsthand what critics have called the future of dance. Join choreographer Victor Quijada and his dancers for an exploration of the ideas that have guided the evolution of rubber band dance group's signature style. Do you have it in you? Somebody's got to work on these translations and their writing. It's a little bit Pepsi. Do you have it in you? There's also Les Imprudences. Yeah, you haven't seen Les Imprudences yet. No, yes, you did.
Yes, of course yes. I have. Yeah, there, yeah, that was very cool.
Let me quickly flip.
I enjoyed that.
Yes, they are very nice. I want to try and... I'm going to have to talk to them because I want to get on their board of directors.
No, you would do very well there. But you... I think also then they should make you dance.
Then I don't want to be on the board of directors. But yes, Les Imprudences is there at the Sala Rosa. It starts at 10 o'clock and it goes to 2 a.m. And there the blurb is, Les Imprudences is a unique and daring movement-based league of improvisation. Every year, Les Imprudences host an annual tournament during the Nuit Blanche with 20 dancers competing and collaborating to create short, spontaneous, improvised dance pieces with parameters imposed by the referee, parameters imposed by the referee set to soundscapes created by a DJ. Your vote determines the winner.
Yeah, I remember how much fun it was when we all went to one of the impro dances, mm-hmm. and it's just, you never know what's going to come up, and I love the audience participation because you get to vote, and
They're actually going to be doing one because it's the first Sunday of the month at Cafe Campus.
So they're still going. They said if things don't pick up, this may be the last season.
I think things are picking up. This is
good.
This is why I want to get on their board of directors.
Yeah, because this is worth keeping around. It's a great institution.
And then as far as why mess with a good thing? There's other dance stuff available on Nuit Blanche as well if you want. There is Air du Tango, which is at... Air du Tango, which is 43. Yeah, does everybody assume knows where Place des Arts is?
Yes, I think that's like the epicenter. Yes.
And then Studio 303 is in the Belgo building, which is 372 St. Catherine Street West. And Sala Rosa is 4848 Saint Laurent Boulevard, and Air du Tango is 4324 Saint Laurent. If you'd like participatory dance as opposed to performative dance, I can use those fancy words as well as anybody else out there. There you can go, dance your heart out. It's founded by Milan Pelletier. This Argentinian tango school celebrated for the beauty of its space and the dynamism. Somebody's got to work on these translations and generosity of its team. During each class, students will be introduced to tango and its history as the team leads them through the basic steps, offering a demonstration at the end of the session. Participants are invited to visit the space and ask questions to satisfy their tango curiosity. It starts every 2 hours on the hour. They're at 9, 11, 1, 3, and 5. Ooh, that 5 o'clock tango?
Imagine that. Tango and then breakfast.
Something like that. It's 2:59, not 5:59. It's 2:59. If you need anything else, if you want to get in contact with us, our email address is movement@ckut.ca. Bettina, thank you very, very much. You've made me sound and look way better than I have any right to. My name is Zeke. Thank you all for listening. We have positive vibes coming up right after Eddie Cochran doing Do You Wanna Dance? Thanks a lot and speak to you later.